Imagine being labeled America's worst mother just because you made the conscious decision to allow your child to experience some independence. If you haven't heard Lenore Scanese's story or read her book, Free Range Kids, well, today's episode is going to be a great introduction to free range children and the Grow Wild movements. Before I start, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is recorded, the Kabi Kabi and the Gubbi Gubbi people. I'd like to honour their songlines and storylines and pay our respects to the elders past, present, and those that are emerging. I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which you are listening to this episode today. It's that time again for the Raising Wildlings podcast. Welcome, welcome. I'm your host today, Vicky Oliver. And on today's episode, I'm so honoured to have America's Worst Mum joining me. You have to Google it, Lenore Scanese. If you Google her name, that is the first thing that will come up. I kid you not. Now, she started out as a New York City columnist and has been a journalist. And then one day after talking to her 9-year-old son, she decided to let him take the subway alone and find his way back home. And in response to an article that she'd written, she had a huge amount of media blowback. And that's what then started the book and the blog, Free Range Kids, and launched the anti-helicopter parenting movement. Thank goodness. Unfortunately, she had to go through quite a fair bit to get there. And she's got a really feisty belief that our kids are safer and smarter than her culture gives them credit for. And that's landed her on talk shows like The Daily Show, Dr. Phil, The View, The Today Show, Good Morning America, you name it, she's probably been on it. And she's also lectured internationally. She's written for everyone from The Wall Street Journal to Mad Magazine. That's right, even Mad Magazine. And we are so, so thrilled to have her on the podcast today to talk about free-range children.
Welcome to Raising Wildlings, a podcast about parenting, alternative education, and stepping into the wilderness, however that looks, with your family.
Each week, we'll be interviewing experts that truly inspire us to answer your parenting and education questions. We'll also be sharing stories from some incredible families that took the leap and are taking the road less travelled.
We're your hosts, Vicky and Nikki from Wildlings Forest School. Pop in your headphones, settle in, and join us on this next adventure.
Lenore, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. It's a real honour and I'm really grateful to have you here. Can you tell us, because I think that your story is so fascinating, it's so incredibly frustrating.
Fascinating
at the same time. So tell us how you have become the pinup for free-range parenting.
Oh, I thought I'd become a pinup. That was going to be an interesting story. I'm like, well, you see, I was at a beach. We were drunk. No. So what happened is years ago at this point, our younger son started asking me and my husband if we would take him someplace he'd never been before here in New York City and let him find his own way home by subway, which is how we get around. And so we decided, yes. And one sunny Sunday, I took my son to this fabulous department store, Bloomingdale's, which happens to sit on top of a subway station. Right. And I left him there. I said, okay, goodbye. Today's the day. And guess what? He took the subway home and then he had to take a bus across town. And he came into the apartment levitating with pride and grown-upness and happiness. And I'm a newspaper reporter. I was, I guess, by trade. And so I wrote a column, Why I Let My 9-Year-Old Ride the Subway Alone. Mm-hmm. And 2 days later, I was on shows that will mean nothing to you because you're in Australia, but like the biggest possible talk shows in America. People were interested in the story. And sometimes Izzy was with me, the 9-year-old, and sometimes he wasn't. But almost every conversation would end with, oh, that's interesting. How did you like it? Was it fun? Was it hard? Blah, blah, blah. And then the host would turn to me and say, okay, but how would you have felt if you never came home?
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that's the way the media can take a triumphant story or even an everyday happy story, not even that triumphant, not that big a deal. It's really quite easy to take the subways, but they could turn it from a story about a mom who trusted her kid, a kid who rose to the occasion, and turn it into a cautionary tale that just for some reason didn't happen to end horribly. But what if it could have? I mean, really, they go from, they'll do anything to get back onto the what about abduction track.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's definitely a theme that I find that comes up when we talk about allowing children a little bit more independence, or comparing even our own childhood to that of the children of today. And there just seems to be this increased perception of risk for today's children, and we must protect them at all costs. And the cost is a real one. So what kinds of things have you been able to come up with and to crystallize in your mind the reason why we need to take these risks with our children? So if we're not thinking about the negatives in terms of what ifs when we let them do it, what are the, mm-hmm. what is the opposite?
Flip the what ifs.
Yeah.
Right, right. So I'll tell you, but starting with the caveat that just the fact that we're thinking of it as a trade-off, like, well, there may be some risk, but there's some reward, is already a new way of thinking. When my mom was sending me outside to walk to school back in the day when all children in elementary school walked themselves there and it wasn't considered a crazy or dangerous or foolhardy idea, it wasn't because she thought, well, she might be kidnapped, but think of the fresh air.
Yeah, that's because, right.
Right? It's not going to win, yeah. Right? So there was a different outlook on life, which was not that every parenting decision had to be weighed against the possibility of your child dying.
Mm-hmm.
Once that happens, I mean, people, I was in Canada giving a talk once, and I was staying with a really nice lady. And she was saying how she'd visited America and for like a week, and her kid had wanted some milk with the cereal. And she said, oh, no, not down here. You know, here they give their cows, I don't know, antibiotics or growth hormones or something. And she literally wouldn't let her child drink the milk in my country, where obviously people are growing up beyond age three, mm-hmm. you know, even yeah. though they drank the milk. But to her, it was really a matter of life and death, like poison or no poison. And so, you know, that's one particularly, you know, one example that stands out for me. But really, the way the magazines and media have framed it in America is that one step off the balance beam of perfection, you know, whether it's an unhappy play date or a bad teacher or the wrong brand of yogurt or waiting at the bus stop without you, any of those could result in the end.
Yeah.
So that's sort of, I mean, I'm actually writing that down for myself. It's such an interesting thing. It's like, if every decision is between something positive or death, death, you know, any way to avoid death is going to win, right?
Exactly.
So with that caveat, which is that we've been trained to think that way,
yep.
you know, good decision, kid lives another 5 minutes, bad decision, they don't. The upshot is becoming pretty clear, which is that, you know, if you look at these graphs, they're really disturbing graphs of childhood anxiety and depression. And some of it has to do with, you know, people talking about it more, kids talking about it more, but some of it has to do with like indisputable numbers, like hospital admissions for harm and stuff like that. So if those keep going up, something is wrong with childhood. It's just rereading a little bit of Alison Gopnik. She wrote a book called The Gardener and the Carpenter. And she's a professor of like neuroscience or something like that at Berkeley. And the reason she called her book The Gardener and the Carpenter is because a carpenter will take whatever materials you give them, like whether it's paper, styrofoam, nuts, or wood, and they must make a chair, right? So they take whatever those materials are and they make a chair because that's their job. They were going to make a chair. Doesn't matter what they got, they make a chair. And it's sturdy and it doesn't change. And a gardener waters the plants, takes out the weeds, you know, tries to provide sunshine if it's a plant that's inside. But they're taking what comes, right? You know, and some of it's just fantastic. You know, you planted the daffodils here, but one of them ends up right next to the old oak tree. And it's, you know, you can't stop Instagramming. It's so beautiful, right? And so if we think of ourselves as parents, as gardeners, and you don't know exactly what you're going to get, you know that you're going to love it. It's yours. And your job is to make it, you know, make sure that the daffodil doesn't wilt for lack of water or sun. then you can sort of almost enjoy your life a little more, and your kid can become who they were going to be. And because we don't get to wire every synapse in them and turn them into something. And if you're a carpenter and you're taking your kid and saying, like, why aren't you good at ballet? You know, or why aren't you getting straight A's? That's harder for both generations. But we've sort of been told that we are carpenters and all our kids should be, you know, superstars and great grades and on their way to a 4-year college education and
an extraordinary life.
Yeah, it's, you know, if I had to live my life with, like, I go out for a walk in the morning. What if I had somebody saying, no, that time is for studying, you know, that way we could get you to read an extra book a week if we only took that, you know, 45 minutes in the morning and used it on French instruction, you know, yeah. Then you'd be better off. And I'm not saying there's no role for education or for real, you know, for organized activities and extracurriculars. But when your whole life is sort of, you know, pointed towards being, you know, always being instructed and assisted and saved,
yeah,
from whatever's out there, it's undermining a lot of, I think it's undermining a lot of kids. And if you've been told that you can't handle anything with an adult, without an adult, of course you're going to be anxious because it sounds, yeah, like everything out there is tough.
That's right? Exactly right. And we see it all the time that there are skyrocketing anxiety levels in our children, and they really cannot function without an adult telling them what to do. We find that a bit at Forest School, to those children that have come from really structured environments, or, you know, most of their life they've had an adult telling them what to do, and we give them a bit of freedom and they're like, not really sure what to, like, it takes a very long time for children to find, to feel safe as well, to feel safe in their own selves and being able to make decisions. But also, I think you touched on, you said something about trust earlier, and I think that's something that's been resonating with me a lot, is that I don't think that a lot of us felt trusted as children, and so we inherently don't trust children now as well, and they feel that. They feel that they can't be trusted and they don't trust themselves in that same way. And that's really, that's heartbreaking to me, to think that children can't trust themselves and then they're not tuning into that intuition, or they're not tuning into being observant around them and being able to tune in all their senses and make sense of the world because they're waiting for someone else to jump in and do it for them. So I think that, yeah, it's definitely a pattern that I've been seeing amongst the children that we work with.
You know, it's all such an interesting ball of wax. You're reminding me, because you're a Forest School, something that somebody told me really early on. I mean, my subway rider, the 9-year-old subway rider, is 25. So it's, mm-hmm, been a long time. But somebody said that nature was distrusted more and more because it's not regular and not regulated. Yeah. Like, you know, there could be a bug there, you know, you could trip over, you know, anything. It's not an indoor play facility where there's, you know, mats and instructions all over the place. And if it's almost like we're trying to get kids unused to paying attention to anything except us and our instructions. And do you know that in Berlin, I think it's just Berlin, but maybe it's all of Germany. No, it is Berlin. So the city pays insurance, and the insurers started telling the schools to please make wilder, a little riskier playgrounds. You can look it up. And the reason was that so many people were tripping and falling and then suing the city, which then had to pay. And the working assumption was that if you grow up where everything is regulated and the ground is flat and there's always extremely regular intervals as you climb the ladder and the ladder's only this high, then you don't, you know, the wherewithal to pay attention isn't, yes, clicking in.
Yes.
Right. So yeah, they want so that you should see some of the pictures of these Berlin playgrounds now. They make me pause.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, woo, you know, you only go, yeah, 4 stories up and then you jump down and then you get nauseous and then you fall off and hooray. But it is amazing because they said exactly what we're doing for safety turns out to make kids less safe.
Yeah, I think that's such a fascinating part of when you're researching and reading into just childhood development and some people that are, or places around the world that are doing the opposite of what so much of society is telling us to do and finding the opposite of what society is expecting
mm-hmm.
and actually seeing really positive results and benefits and less of all the things that we're worried about,
mm-hmm.
It's taking a long time for us to work that out and implement those things. There's still those people that are going, no, the risk is still too high. It's still too much.
Because we keep thinking in terms of risk. Mm-hmm. I mean, it feels natural at this point to think of risk and reward. And, you know, there are risks and rewards of maybe skydiving, but there's not, I mean, like we just can't write that walk to school as a risk.
Mm.
We've written everything into the risk formula and it's dumb. I mean, and I have examples of why. I mean, like their parents magazine, yay, just went out of business. Not really out of business, but it's online. Ceased publication in hard form, which is too bad because it gave me something fun to look through every month to go, oh my God. But they had like one of their, before they went out of business, one of their articles was the top 10 hidden dangers in your home. And number one was, I thought like poison, you know, rat poison or something. No, the number one was the laundry hamper. Can you figure out why?
No.
You'd never figure out why. You shouldn't think like that, but this is the way they're trying to make you think. And you know, if it's on the cover of the national magazine that is the most popular one with parents, maybe you think it's true. And it said, you know, there's those laundry hampers that are made out of like very thin fabric stretched around a wire that is, you know, sort of like those things that kids crawl through when they have the, you know, the little caves or whatever you want to call it, the tubes. Anyways, some people have laundry hampers like that. And the magazine said, and what if the wire gets loose while the kid is standing there? It could scratch their cornea. And I'm like,
they're reporting incidents of that left, right, and center at the hospitals. Yes,
right. Those cornea slicing laundry hamper accidents that are so rampant. And then, of course, they find somebody. I'm a reporter. I know how to do this. You call up a publicist for a big hospital system. You say, can you find me an ophthalmologist who's dealt with a lot of children's injuries? And they find you somebody who's desperate to be quoted. And they say, oh, yeah, we once had one. And that becomes the tenor of the day is if something bad happened to any kid anywhere ever, all parents should be worried about it everywhere all the time.
That's exactly what it is. And that's... I don't like living. I mean, I don't live like that. I choose not to buy into those things. But I can tell you right now that if I did, I would be driving myself completely mental. Like I wouldn't be able to enjoy being a parent. I wouldn't be able to share joy with my children, worrying about them like that all of the time. Or if I was an educator, I just wouldn't feel joy in anything fun because you'd just be so worried. And I do see that. I see that in educators really being scared of doing anything outside of the box because they are worried about the ramifications and the responsibility because it's all about risk and because that's rammed down our throats, you know, even to run our programs, it's all about risk assessments and things like that, which is fine. I think that there is a level of safety that's our responsibility to ensure that we are managing reasonable risk.
Right. And let's not call it risk.
Yeah. Let's call it
safety. Reasonable safety.
Reasonable safety.
But risk starts turning, you know, flips it on its side. So there was, you asked me, what are some of the ramifications? So there was a study, a preliminary study done at Georgetown University, prestigious university in Washington, D.C. here, by three psychology professors. And what they want to do a larger study of eventually is the question of, are children getting such a sort of smoothie of a childhood, you know, every lump has been taken out and it's super enriched and it's made by someone else. Is that hurting kids' risk assessment? They literally wonder their working assumption is that between the ages of 5 and 12, 7 and 12, that's when kids traditionally would get a lot of free time in mixed age groups, running around, whether you're, you know, you're playing ball or going to the store or playing dolls or walking to school. And that's when you start figuring out like, wow, I just crossed the street and the car went by. I better give myself more time. Or, you know, don't keep poking at the dog because there could be a hole in the fence, you know, things like that. And John Haidt, who I work with, Jonathan Haidt, who wrote The Coddling of the American Mind, I guess it's not The Coddling of the Australian Mind, but it's a very popular book here. He says that there's a growth spurt until about age 5, and then things slow down until puberty. Hmm. And it's sort of like, that's the gathering experience time. That's the foundational time. And if you don't have experiences that help you calibrate how much you can do and what feels right and, you know, what you can learn to do safely, you end up thinking that everything is hard mm-hmm. and unsafe because you've always had somebody with you saying, I'll do that for you, or no, don't do that yet, or I'd rather, you know, even if it's not stated that way, you've been in supervised activities. And here in America, tell me if this is the same in Australia. Parents wait with their kids at the bus stop now in the morning for the school bus. Is that happening there?
It does. Yeah. I'm starting to see a little bit more freedom for children. And I think it also depends on where you live, because there's some places that are probably a little bit more cautious than others. But I'm seeing it a lot more children riding by themselves, but I do still see a lot of parents. Yeah, it is good. Like it's trying to find some of the positive changes.
Yeah.
Again, or the remembering, I like to call it. I call it the remembering. It's like
the remembering. That's great.
Yeah.
I'm taking notes too.
Yeah. Parents definitely will wait, you know, with their children in every other way. So outside of school, if there's any other activity, the children are left on their own and at all.
They are not left on their own.
No.
Yeah, no. Same. So let me tell you, so here's what they did. You know, they want to eventually do this these Georgetown professors want to do a big study at some point, but they did a preliminary study just sort of as proof of concept. And they're college professors, they have college students at their fingertips. So they asked college students in America and Canada, which are sort of considered, you know, identical twins, and then college students in Russia and Turkey, the same list of questions. How safe is it to wait, you know, to be in a cafe by yourself, you know, to walk home, you know, 3 blocks at dusk, to whatever, to make yourself a scrambled egg? Like, I don't know what the things were. But over and over, the American kids kept rating things as dangerous that, you know, statistically are not dangerous, like sitting home, you know, sitting in a cafe, or walking a couple blocks by yourself. And so if your risk assessment never develops, I mean, it's sort of like your immune system never developing. And, you know, your immune system is, you know, it can catch everything. If you don't, you know, the boy in the bubble, if you never have any germs, right, you don't build up any antibodies. And, you know, the bones need, what is it, resistance,
yes,
which I never do. You can tell I'm like the spindliest
yes,
person alive.
Women, very important.
Yes. But so that's resistance builds the bone, right? So it's a little bit of you know, difficulty, right?
Yeah.
Is helpful. And same with germs, you know, you catch cold and then you're a little stronger afterwards. So you build up your immunity. And so that's called anti-fragile. There are things that are fragile. I drop this, it's going to break. There are things that are resilient, like a ball, you bounce it, nothing bad happens to the ball. So the point is that there are systems that are fragile, systems that are plain old resilient, and then there are systems that are anti-fragile, like the bones, like the immune system, and like children, that need to have a little friction, a little fear, a little challenge before they become robust. So they need it. And when we take this out of kids' lives, I was just reading an article this morning about something else, but I was going to steal the guy's analogy, which is that if kids grow up without any calcium, you know, during their growth spurt, they'll live, but they'll be, you know, not as strong and probably not as tall as they would have had they gotten this crucial ingredient. And we're taking the calcium out of kids' lives by being with them all the time. And, optimizing their lives. You know, we're going to drive you so you don't have to walk. I'm going to hold your backpack so it's not too heavy. I'm going to watch you so you're not lonely.
It's the micro stuff too, isn't it? It's not just sending your child out on the subway at 9 years old. It's that stuff too. It's like holding their backpacks. It's helping them get changed. It's, you know, making sure you're filling up their water bottle and doing all of those things. And so it's exercising the smaller muscles that are still necessary, right, in order for them mm-hmm. to be independent children. Such an important point that you make there as well, because I see a lot of that. And I mean, I'm guilty of it too sometimes, because
we're all good. It's hard. Don't say guilty. Don't say guilty, because I feel bad. I mean, first of all, I'm part helicopter on my mom's side, right? And we're living in a culture, I mean, that has made this the norm. You know, I mean, don't feel guilty that you don't have your kids spear their food in the bush. You know, it's just not how we do it anymore. We go to the grocery. It's okay. Yeah. But there's, you know, the culture has made us so concerned that anytime a kid is uncomfortable or unhappy, we've done something wrong. And also lies to us and said, your kids will feel really happy if you get them stuff and take them to we have, you know, restaurants that are just for kids, Chuck E. Cheese or Disneyland or anything like that. And it's, I did this television show that nobody watched, but it was me going to a bunch of really worried families, and like a family that, you know, wouldn't let their kids play on the front lawn, stuff like that, because they were so afraid. And one of the kids had never had a play date. She was 10 years old. Because her mom didn't want her going to somebody else's house, because God forbid there might be horrible people there. But she also didn't want kids coming to her house. And I don't remember why. I think she just thinking she was so filled with anxiety that she couldn't handle the chaos of a child visiting. And so for the challenge that this show, i.e. me, gave to that family, was to let her daughter, Brianna, 10, have a play date at her house. And she did. She invited two friends that she loved from school who came over. And they had a pool, so they played in the pool for a while, and then they played Barbies or whatever. And afterwards, I said, well, how was that? And she said, it was like the best birthday. She said, no, it was better than a birthday party. And kids are born to not, they don't really need Disneyland. There's nothing wrong with Disneyland, but what they really need is time with other kids without an adult telling them what to do, and that we don't give them.
Yeah, absolutely. I was speaking to Mark Armitage, who is a play worker, and he was saying one of his favorite ways to watch, because with play work, it's a lot of hands-off, still supervising children, but really quite hands-off. But he said his favorite to watch is when children are in like secret spaces where they're just trying to have some time to themselves, where they're not, because they're the most supervised generation that's ever been,
the children
that we have now. And that really resonated as well, as how do we give children more of this time, because they're so overscheduled, and making that a priority for parents. What kind of advice do you have for people to live the free-range parenting philosophy, even if it's just a little bit?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So Free-Range Kids grew into a nonprofit that's called Let Grow, L-E-T, new word, G-R-O-W. And we have two ideas and implementation guides that are free, even though the ideas are so simple, you barely need the implementation guides. But we recommend them for schools. And I'll tell you what they are in a second. But let me say why we try to go through schools rather than just individual parents, which is that if you have a kid and you say, okay, honey, go to the park. I want to go free range. I'm a let grow mom. And they go to the park and there's no one there. Or there's, you know, two nannies with two two-year-olds and your kid is seven. It is so boring that they will turn around and come home. And here it's possible that someone will call 911 and say, I saw a child outside. So the reason we work through schools is because if a bunch of kids start going to the park or a bunch of kids are outside, that renormalizes it, right? You can change a whole town or neighborhood or culture. So the two projects or the two programs that we have are called the Let Grow Project. And when you said secret spaces, it reminded me of one of them. So the Let Grow Project, download it free from our site, is a homework assignment that schools give kids. And it just says, go home and do something new on your own without your parents. And because it's an order basically from the school. And because parents trust their kids' teachers and love the school and don't want their kids to fail by not doing a homework assignment, they steel themselves and they let their kids walk the dog or go to the park or do any of the things that we were talking about before. Get your backpack on and go to the bus stop by yourself tomorrow morning. Because all the other parents are doing it too, it's normal. Yeah. So it's a push. It's a push to get it done. And it's normal. And you're not the guilty feeling, feeling yep. guilty because how dare I take that risk? It's like, this is not a risk. This is something I have to do. And we have a giant list of activities, but the point is there's also another million activities mm-hmm. that like, I can't go and look for kangaroos where I live, right? But, I don't think you have the same squirrels as us. So there's you and your, whether you're in an urban setting or a suburban setting or you're out in the country. I mean, it's up to you. Somebody just made a fantastic video about the Let Grow project. And I just watched it. One of the kids drove a potato truck. What? He's nine. Yeah. But his grandparents have a farm and he desperately wanted to drive this gigantic potato truck. And they taught him what to do and he did it. And it makes for great video, I have to say. Yeah. But of course, he's not going to drive a potato truck where I am here in New York City. So So the Let Grow project is like our flagship thing, because once the parent sees the kid come back from the potato truck drive or or walking the dog or climbing the tree or getting the milk. There's a fantastic New Zealand commercial about a kid getting milk for the first time. And look it up. It's like parents are like, ah, and the kid comes home. It's a beautifully done commercial. That's what changes the parent, yes. right? The parent has to have that excitement. I mean, you you're in the forest all the time. You show a parent, look, that's your kid up there. Where?
Yeah.
In the tree. I mean, they're thrilled, right? Especially when the kid comes down.
Yeah, you have to experience it. You have to see it to have that feeling. I think that's something we often comment on, is that it's really hard to describe it unless you've seen it and experienced it. And I think that's a really powerful way for parents to see that shift, is to actually see the result of allowing their children to do something that they weren't allowed to do before then. That's a really cool idea.
Well, it's sort of embodied in this one, which is that thinking about things doesn't change anything, especially mm-hmm. in a culture where we say, what if, right? So only behavior changes behavior. Because mm-hmm. by changing your behavior that once and letting the kid climb the tree and then seeing them when they're done and they're so proud, or it was scary, but they want to do it again. Mm-hmm. Any of these things makes your heart burst with pride and yeah. excitement, because you're watching the flower unfold as opposed to being the iron dome above it saying, no, there's danger out there. So it really rewires the parent yeah. as much as it rewires the kid, and it allows them to let go a little easier the second time. And then by the fourth time, it's like, okay, call me when you're down from the tree sort of thing. Get me a coconut. So the Let Grow project, 15 years, same topic. I wouldn't be talking about it if it didn't work.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't free and yeah. very and accessible to every parent on the planet. I guess if you don't speak English, a little harder, but there it is. So the Let Grow project is one of our big pushes. And the other one is the Let Grow Play Club. And that is, so we suggest that schools stay open for all schools. For mixed age, no devices, free play after school. And if we all had trained play workers, there'd be a play worker in the corner. But without yeah. trained play workers, there's, a volunteer or a parent or a teacher with an EpiPen. Somebody is standing in the corner in case there's a terrible problem, but otherwise not intervening, not suggesting games, not organizing teams, not solving the arguments. If there's an argument and they come to you, we've had people who tell the kids, is this a kid problem or an adult problem? It's like, well, it's yeah. a kid problem. It's like, okay, well, you're kids. Go figure yeah. it out. And, there's a lot of different ways of dealing with the disagreements, but the way you don't do it is the way that we all know doesn't work in our own homes. It's like, I know, quids, quit, you yeah. get half an hour online and then she gets 45 minutes because she was waiting longer, but then you get an hour and a half because it was so long and that was right at prime time. trying to negotiate between your kids is so painful and pointless because they haven't figured out how to deal with each other at all. They've just figured out how to pull you in both directions. She said, looking off at her kid. So, so the Let Grow Project and the Let Grow Play Club are two real world, easy, free things to do that I hope your school does. And I hope I'll hear from some people down there who start doing it at their schools. You know, I'm Lenore, L-E-N-O-R-E, not like the fabric softener. There's an E, Lenore at letgrow.org. I have to say Lenore fabric softener was something I didn't find out about until I left America. Do you guys have it?
No, I don't.
Do you have it? Oh, okay. It must just be Europe. It's like so embarrassing. You go, it's like being called Mr. Clean or something, whatever. You know.
The cultural difference.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I think that we will definitely, I think that a lot of people are starting to be more and more interested in ways in which we can give our children more independence. And there's like just having simple ideas. Sometimes we just need simple ideas put straight in front of our faces.
Right.
But this is that I think that what you do is so brilliant. And we will put all of the links to Let Grow and your programs and your book in our show notes.
Oh, yeah.
So to wrap up our interview, Lenore, I just wanted to ask you a really quick three questions. So the first one is, do you have a book that you would recommend our listeners? It doesn't even have to be on this topic, something that you're liking at the moment or one of your all-time favorite books.
God, I could give you my book list. I love novels, but the book I have to recommend that changed my outlook on everything that you will love, in particular, you probably know it already. It's called Free to Learn by Peter Gray. Is it your favorite book?
Yes.
It is the greatest book. Okay. So I didn't, you know, this was not a planned thing. It's not pick a card. Oh my God. It's the Ace of Spades.
No. He was the first person we interviewed on the podcast, actually.
The best.
His work is amazing.
So we're mooning about Peter Gray.
Yes.
G-R-A-Y, who has studied children and playing and mixed age play his entire career. And in the book, Free to Learn, it just talks about all the different things that are happening in kids' brains when they play that aren't happening when they're doing an adult organized activity.
Mm.
And Peter Gray is one of the founders of Let Grow.
Which is amazing. It doesn't surprise me. Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's such a great.
This I have to say, this is the other guy who also founded Let Grow with me, Jonathan Haidt. who wrote The Coddling the American Mind. So
I'm going to have to read that actually.
It's really good. It's really good. It talks about the untruths that are being propagated as truths, especially to young people. And that is like, what doesn't kill you makes you weaker. You know, so anything bad that happens is horrible. That the world is turned into, is divided between good people and bad people. So if you're good and you disagree with somebody else, they must be bad. And the last one was always trust your feelings. So if you feel insulted or hurt by something, the person must have deliberately wanted to hurt you. And that's not fair.
Yeah.
And it tries to get you to put a little space between your feeling and trying to think about maybe there's another interpretation of why you're feeling so bad.
That's really fascinating and actually very pertinent to, I think, so much division that's happening at the moment and probably they're so, very core things that we need to come back to so that we don't see so much of that.
Right. But Free to Learn is there as favorite, you know, favorite book I would recommend to people, and I'm always recommending it to people.
Awesome. Where do you go, Lenore, to unwind after a big week or just when you need to reset?
It's not after, it's before. So I live in Queens, which there's five boroughs of New York City. Mm-hmm. Queens is the best, I have to say. And I live in a neighborhood where you can walk through different countries by just walking a few blocks. Like my neighborhood starts out Indian, Bengali, and Nepali. And then it becomes Colombian and Mexican and Peruvian. And then if you go on an angle and walk for about, do you guys do kilometers or miles?
Kilometers.
Okay, maybe 2 kilometers. You end up in China, strangely enough. And so I go in the morning to a very Chinese park where there's three different dancing troupes all playing Chinese music and all like, so it's cacophony because they're all playing different songs at once. And then I exercise with some of these other ladies. Some are Bengali, one's from Ecuador and one's from Taiwan. And to me, you know, it's hard to get myself out of bed and it's freezing here today because it's cold still. And then I leave with a smile.
I love that. That sounds like a really beautiful community that you belong to. That's brilliant.
It's the coolest. So if you guys come to New York, just get yourselves to Jackson Heights.
Yeah,
just
right.
Just remember the name Jackson Heights and wander around, and you'll just, it's the most diverse place on the planet. It has a lot of really great cheap food and a million fruit stands and bakeries. So that's
Fruit stands and bakeries.
Yeah.
Amazing. All right. And if you could change one thing about the education system, what do you think that would be?
Oh, wow. What an interesting question. Well, can I be like the genie? I would ask for one thing would be that I would ask for three things that I could change. I would, of course, do the Let Grow project. I would have that be part of the curriculum, just like, you know, a health class or a PE class, because our culture has become so afraid of letting kids do anything on their own. We have to recalibrate. Mm-hmm. And this provides the perfect recalibration, because it's that reward system in parents, like, oh my God, that was so great. And the reward system in kids, oh my God, I can do anything. So that's what I would do.
Yeah, brilliant. And I think that you're spot on. I think that your program, hopefully, that's the goal, hey, and that's the work that you do, and that other people like us are championing all of the things that you're doing. So glad that you exist in the world, and that, you know, you put yourself out there, and, you know, you're changing the lives of children everywhere. And yeah, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast with me today. And yeah, thank you so much.
Wow. That was very effusive. You're very, 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 very welcome.
There is still so much to talk about when it comes to allowing our children independence. And it's been so great to talk to Lenore about her experience, which still happened a few years ago now, and how it's probably getting worse in some ways, in some areas, but hopefully getting a lot better. The more that we have these conversations and the more that we share the discussions that we're having, which reminds me to remind you that when you share our podcast, our content, or those moments in the podcast that really resonate with you, really helps to get our message out and for more people to hear what we have to say and what the people that we interview have to say, and keep this conversation going. And at the end of the day, it's the children that benefit. It's really thinking about the sort of future that we want for our children. That's why we've created the podcast. So make sure you like and follow the podcast. It helps you because you never miss an episode, and it helps us, like I said, because it gets our message out to more and more people. You can also join us on the Raising Wildlings podcast Instagram page. That is our new page. We'd love to see you and join us there. Nikki and I have been sharing a lot more of our personal journeys on that page. So come and hang out, come and say hi. You can always keep an eye on us also at Wildlings Forest School on Instagram as well, where you can see how it looks in real life, children connecting in nature and experiencing all those awesome adventurous activities. But as always, I love doing this adventure with you every single week, me and Nikki combined. So until next time, stay wild.